Shall we begin?
Let's begin now.
You're listening to the Dishin' and Swishin' podcast on HoopFeed.com.
Hi, everybody. It's David Siegel welcoming you to this week's Dishin' and Swishin' podcast. And you know, last week we started off the NCAA season in the SEC with Coach Don Staley, and we're going to stay there this week. And, yes, I know there's a lot of other conferences, and we'll cover them all, but I'm pleased to welcome Coach Melanie Balcom of Vanderbilt University back to the podcast. Coach, how are you today?
I'm doing great, David. How are you?
I'm doing well. Coach, I wanted to talk to you this year in particular because this is an unusual season for you because you are the – actually, people may not realize you are the active career leader in wins in the SEC, but last year was a little bit of an off year for the team, the first time since you've been there that you didn't make the tournament, and now you're in that position of trying to get back to where you were. So that's something that's a different experience for you and the school.
Yes, quite a challenge, and I love challenges, so I'm okay with fighting back. And I think it's all how you recover. It's all how you recover in life. It's how you recover in your mistakes in the game. And I think what's really important is how we recover from last year. And that's just working harder, being more disciplined, staying positive, and, you know, looking at what happened last year and really learning from it and growing from it, which losing is painful, and I forgot how painful it could be, and I got reminded. So we've made a lot of, I think, positive changes that people will see on the floor.
Well, one thing that really struck me as interesting is, now you mentioned the changes, and we'll get into the discussion of the transfers in and out that happened, but it was interesting to me reading the comments from Media Day and all that the players made comments that this year you have every people that are there are vested and all in, and that seemed to be a bit of a problem last year if the players were commenting on that.
Yeah, that's not anything I gave them, and I sat in there and listened, and, you know, the players know in the locker room who's in and who's not, and I think, you know, that's one of the biggest things with the you see nationally in transferring is kids come here or go wherever for all the wrong reasons, whether they didn't get to know the program or the coaches or the system enough because somebody else is doing it for them or telling them where to go or they're following other players. You know, there's all kinds of things going on. And when they get there, they have one foot in and one foot out and looking at the situation. Well, if I get what I want in this situation, I'll get in. And if I don't, the minute something goes wrong and they don't get what they want, which is going to happen probably for the first time with a great player their freshman year, then they're out. And it's that easy. They're never all the way in to start with. That is, I feel like, is the biggest problem.
No, and as you mentioned, these are players that, let's face it, if they're playing D1, they were one of the top players in their high school. They're in their region or whatever the case may be, their AAU programs. They get coaches in their ears from all different sides, plus parents. And, you know, even when they make their visits, it just seems that those visits aren't sufficient for them to say, you know, this is what I want to do. This is where I want to go, and this is where I want to get my degree.
Yeah. Well, I think they've lost sight of the degree. I think they've lost sight of all the things that matter, the relationships, the degree, the future. They're caught up in material things such as how much, you know, Nike gear they get and how they charter and what kind of locker room they have and facilities. And I think it's just out of whack. That's what we got that all come before they get here. They're transferring in high school if they don't get what they want. Then they transfer an AAU program. Some of these kids are on all kinds of different teams. When they don't get what they want, they go to another team. And the great players, the best players, are already been recruited since they were like 11. And it's been about what they're given, whether they're given, or they get to travel for free, or they get to ride on a plane instead of a bus, or they get more touches or more shots and everything's around them, or more sneakers. They're being sold all these things that are material, and then that's what they're basing their college decisions on. And when they get here, it's not about that. It's about competition, and it's about winning.
And there's no question that if you look at your program, the team, you know, you've been highly successful, you know, over 20 wins, you know, just about every year. You know, the school itself, of course, is one of the top in the country. You know, and most of these players will not be going on to playing professionally. And as you mentioned, you know, I just, what do we do different? What can we change to try and minimize that type of impact on a program? I mean, here's a situation, you know, you lost four players that one of them was injured for most of the last year, but you lost three players that were part-time starters or full-time starters and played over 20 minutes a game last year. You invested a lot in that player, and you get nothing in return.
No, nothing. And those kids, if you ask them, they'd all say they filled their – and I've had freshmen do this, and it's almost been all freshmen that transfer, and they said, well, we fulfilled our commitment. Where did they get that? I thought they committed for 4 years. And now the NCAA is telling us we have to commit for 4 years. We no longer can say it's year to year. So the animals are running the zoo. The players know they're given 4 years, but they think that they're only in it for a year. Could you imagine if I always compare it to dating, and the engagement is a verbal, and then when you get the ring is when you sign. Well, if your commitment isn't for life, if it isn't all in, and the minute something goes wrong in your relationship and you don't get what you want and you're out, that's why you see so many divorces out there. I mean, it really parallels, and they are relationships. And they're ready. They're like, they're looking for the first thing that goes wrong, and they're going to go date somebody else. They're going to get divorced and go try to date somebody else right away. They were never committed to fixing and working the process of what it takes to be a great basketball player.
And
I could go on, so I'm trying to stop myself.
No, I'm loving it. I agree 100% with everything you're saying, and I do think that, to me, this is the biggest epidemic and problem that we have in college sports right now, especially in a sport.
And the NCAA addresses everything but transfer. So why is transferring so easy? Why do you have these rules where you graduate and you can go on and play somewhere else and not play at the school that just invested all that time and money in you? And they even got you a degree.
Yeah.
They can now go on and play a fifth year somewhere else. There's a kid from Virginia that was the leading rebounder in the ACC. And she had a fifth year and it walked in and said she wants to play pro, wasn't getting enough touches. And she ends up going to an SEC school to play her final year because she thinks she can go pro because they're in the top five in the country. You know, they're going to the Final Four. And her team wasn't. Instead of staying with her team, which, if she was good enough, she's going to go pro anyway, but they've already invested in all that. Once she even got her degree and got out. It's really about how much they can get out of where they're going before they leave. And they have an exit plan.
It's pretty amazing. And, you know, and it's kind of ironic in some of these things. You know, you look at, you know, on the men's side at UConn this year, there's a kid that came from the Ivy League. Well, he was one of the leading scorers and rebounders in the Ivy. They don't redshirt, and he missed the season because he was injured. So while he said he would have preferred to stay at the stay, he wants to play one more year. So he had to transfer out of the Ivy League to Connecticut to get a year of playing.
Oh,
now,
wow.
And here we get the opposite on this side. You know, the girl from Virginia playing for South Carolina now, you know, that's with eyes on going pro. At least, you know, you have one girl this year that's a transfer in as well from Texas Tech, Minta Spears.
Yes.
But she's enrolled in grad school, correct?
Yes.
So
she has 2 years and can play right away because she tore her ACL her first year and graduated at Texas Tech in 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Smart girl.
Yeah. And we were recruiting her. But she committed early on to Texas Tech before we had a shot at her, which is why kids end up transferring, is they commit so early now before they know anybody. Again, this is a whole other NCAA issue when you're limiting contacts and you're limiting all these things, and so then they're just listening to a lot of other people, and they get placed at places, or they, you know what I'm saying, where they go for the wrong reasons that it looks like when they really don't know. Now, in Minta's situation, I feel like it's totally different, because what happened in Minta's situation is not only did she get hurt, which changes a lot of things, it's the coach that recruited her and she went to play for left and is at Alabama, and she got a whole new coaching staff and system that she didn't feel like she fit in. So I think that's a totally different situation and should be addressed differently with the NCAA rules.
You know, it really does seem like the entire system of transferring, you know, is broken. The way that the kids can leave, the way that the coaches can leave, and the kids can't leave if it's a different system, as you said. You know, it just seems like, as you said, the inmates running the asylum. There isn't
there's no organization here. No, and I have a coach I respect really well on the West Coast that told me, the players know their compliance officer's name better than you do. And that I just cracked up when she said that, because that is the truth. Like, they know their exit plan. They know ahead of time what they're trying to get. And they're losing all sight of being in the moment at the time, working hard to develop their skills to help a team win. Like, they've lost all sight of that. And when we're trying to coach the process, they're looking at us like we're crazy.
Well, Coach,
I think the other thing is it's too easy to transfer, David. What if you – okay, when you transfer, what's the penalty? There is none. You get a free year of school. You don't have to play in games, so you can go party all you want, and you don't have to be in shape. All you do is show up for practice. It's another free year, and now you start to go into grad school and get more school. So really, there's all it is positive. And I say, and no one's ever said this, but I say, what if you transferred and you're a regular student now, and you'd have to pay for that year, and you'd get financial aid like a regular student. If you had to pay for that year you don't play, do you know how many people that wouldn't transfer?
Yeah, you're right.
We'd change it immediately.
That's a great concept. Yeah, because then
nobody repeats that. I've said it a lot.
And don't forget the other part, too, is now the kid has gone there. They've had the year. They've gone and done the academic route. So now they're a year ahead of their eligibility. So now they sit out and they can transfer at the end of when they graduate and get that extra year elsewhere.
Yes. I mean, it's set up for them to transfer. And they all know that now. They're always a step ahead, and they know the system, and they know what goes on because of social media. When they read one thing, okay, when you read the kid left and said some family member was sick and they all went after Alabama because you didn't release them. And meanwhile, do you know how many kids tried to do that after that, was get to play right away because there was a family member sick? Now, that family member was sick when they went to that school. They knew that when they went there. And unless they got some special disease in those last during that freshman year, which you can't prove, nobody wants to say anything, and we all criticize the school.
Right.
But the people that follow that, because they read about that injustice, that social injustice by these ugly ugly colleges and universities that are using the players and making money off them, and then I can't tell you how many players have tried that. And now they're looking into making rules about that.
Wow.
It's crazy.
It is a crazy system, there's no question.
Oh, my sister got sick, you knew that when you decided to go there. What is that? You know, these things are just crazy. But social media, now everything is out there. So everybody knows and watches what everybody else does. And when you're comparing, my sports psychologist says this all the time, when you're comparing, you're not competing.
Gotcha. That's an interesting concept, too.
Yeah, they need to compete.
No, what we should have done, we should have gotten Matthew Mitchell in on this conversation with the way their guys can like flies at Kentucky, too.
Well, you know what? You got to stay ahead of the curve, and you got to actually set up things where they have to compete. And if they don't compete, then they're off the team. We need to be in control again.
Well,
and that may be what's happening at Kentucky. There's standards set up. And if you don't reach those standards, then you aren't on that team. That it is a privilege to be on a team again.
I do like that. And the academics, of course, as I mentioned, with Vanderbilt is a key part, because this is one of the top schools in the country.
Yes.
And to go there in the first place, you got to have your priorities straight. You know, you may not be in the WNBA, but you're going to be able to get one heck of a job when you get out.
Well, yeah, and a much better job than the WNBA. It's like a summer job and pays $30,000. They don't want to hear that part either. And even overseas, the professional ball over there is becoming more limited. The opportunities there are much more limited than they used to be. They need to get an education, and they need to think about what we tell them. It's not for 4 years. This isn't a basketball factory. Here we teach you how to be a better person, a better student, and a better basketball player, and it's about the next 40 years and what that degree will do that you will get and the kind of person and the character and the life skills that we teach. And winning is going to be a byproduct of that. It's not win at all cost here. And yet we are in the most competitive women's basketball conference, football conference, and it's going to be a really good competitive men's basketball conference as well in the country. So you get the best of both worlds. It's a great place.
So let's segue that right into conversation about this year's team. And let's get to something a little more upbeat, because right now everybody's undefeated and you got a great shot at winning the national championship like everybody else.
Yeah, and we're undefeated, and there's not playing time or roles divvied out, so everybody's happy.
Well,
I don't think that they're going to be the next star.
Well, Coach, the season is definitely going to be a challenge. I mean, the conference is absolutely amazing with so many great teams. You know, you start, you know, right, never mind just the top, where you get South Carolina and Tennessee and Kentucky we talked about, but then, you know, of course, Gary Blair is tough, and Vic Schaefer has done a great job with Mississippi State. So there are no days off in this conference. There's no question about that. And, of course, just to make it more fun, you know, let's start the season at Dayton at Green Bay, giving two of the best mid-majors a shot at the SEC school, too.
Yeah, and we scheduled those teams here last year because we really wanted to get some good programs to come to Vanderbilt. We have a really tough time getting BCF schools outside of conference to play us at home because we win 80-some percent of our games at home and our tradition of success here. So for us to get better-ranked teams, we have to go after those mid-majors that win 20 games to 30 games in their conference. And Dayton and Wisconsin Green Bay are two of those programs that everybody avoids playing and is not willing to play. And we played them along with James Madison. And James Madison would finish the series. We went there first. So we played three mid-majors last year that are, you know, top 50 teams that nobody wants to play. And now we got two left to go on the road and play.
And I wish that everybody would play those teams and give them a chance, but people always look at them as there's nothing. What do we have to gain if they, you know, they're good? They're going to beat us, and then we say we lost to a non-power conference.
But if you beat them, we've beaten James Madison in the last 2 years, home and away. When you beat them, those are just as good a wins as the BCS. I think you do. You have to look at your schedule and say what this. You know, if I win, I was supposed to win by more. And if I lose, I was supposed to win. So it is a lose-lose. But at the same time, if you want to test your team and get them SEC prepared for good teams and to go against good teams and good coaches, you need to play some teams. And if I can't get BCS teams to come here, I'm going to play some of those mid-majors because I like a challenge, and I think that we need to play them. And I think more teams in the SEC need to play a tougher schedule preseason. Even though the league is so tough.
And, you know, at least when it comes to tournament seedings, they're starting to take that a little bit more into account. I mean,
a little bit.
I mean, North Carolina got beaten up for it a couple of years, but not too many others.
Yeah,
that was the one everybody complained about, so they got beaten up, and that was it.
There's quite a few out there. The reason they got beaten up is they did more like their men. Like, they didn't leave the state.
Right.
You can't just play about the no-name schools in your state and just pay them money. I think there's other teams doing that in the SEC where they play regional games for finance, you know, budget reasons, where that gets us in trouble. Everybody complains. But they're also, you know, there's budget issues that you don't know what programs are going through and where they're at. So out of conference, they want their women's teams to play close to home. And when you do that, and you're not playing a team in conference in the SEC, you're going to play some bad teams regionally.
And the other one I did omit when I mentioned the two starting out with Dayton and Green Bay is,
yeah.
You know, by all accounts, I'm hearing that Drexel is a legit team this year. And, you know, and they'll be on, and they're on the schedule, too, for the first week in December.
They're always legit.
On the road.
Their coach is very good. And, yes, we got to play them on the road, and then they'll come back here. But they're very good. They're an NCAA team every year. Like I said, they're well coached. We've played them in the past. And they run a spread offense that's very difficult to guard and will be a big challenge on the road. Absolutely.
So looking at the squad this year, now you did lose the players that you did. You did bring in Spears, who by all accounts will be an upgrade at the point guard position.
Yeah.
But you do have back a couple of, you know, your top leading scorers in Dahlman, Bailey, and Webb. So the cupboard certainly wasn't empty. So let's talk about what we're expecting out of them this year.
Well, I'm expecting a lot of improvement. I'm expecting to improve as a team. I think individually they took their investment to another level because we held them to another level and a higher standard. But the next job is to get them to play better as a team. We gave up too many easy buckets. Obviously, defensively, we weren't where we needed to be. We turned the ball over too much. We either scored or we turned it over, which our strength was scoring, and those were three of our highest scorers. But we have other people that can score. I think Rachel Bell, Kendall Shaw, and Krista Reed. Krista Reed got injured last year early in January. So we had the fifth best schedule in the country, and three season ending injuries in January. Nobody talks about that. Everyone wants to talk about the transfers. And the transfers that left, David, were not productive. They had potential to be, but they weren't. So we have a lot coming back and a lot of positives, I think, with kids that want to be here. And that's why you heard that in the press conference from our players.
Now, in addition to the players that we mentioned, you know, Rebecca Dahlman was the leading scorer last year. I remember just a couple of years ago when you were in Connecticut, I remember seeing Jasmine Jenkins play and being impressed with her defensive ability and the way that she can pressure the ball. So, you know, Vanderbilt is still going to be a pain in the neck for anybody trying to score with the defense that you guys put out there and the pressure that you can put on the ball.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be key to everything we do this year is pressuring the basketball. You couldn't have said any better. We don't have height, per se, and the athletes inside that some of these teams are, but we have long, athletic guards. JJ is now the smallest guard I have, and she's not small. We don't have any small guards anymore, and we need to get after it on the perimeter. We're going to get back to our matchup that we used to be so successful with because now we have the players that can play in that matchup and really pressure the basketball and force other people to go fast and get out of control and make mistakes.
You mentioned size, and that is the big variable so often. And this year in the SEC, you look at the size of Tennessee, you look at the size of South Carolina.
Yep.
Do you look zoned? What do you think? Do you just play your game?
Matchup. And we can't play zone. We tried to play zone against those teams, and they would just threw it up over us. We can't play zone and pack it in, and that doesn't make them take jump shots because they still throw it up over them. And they just put it on the low block. And, you know, Don Staley is one of the smartest coaches out there. It looks like the most boring offense in America, but when you're bigger than everybody at the two low blocks, why are you going to take them off the two low blocks? So she keeps it real simple, and they score. And they have the talent, and they have size. So what we've got to do is do a better job of pressuring the basketball, making people uncomfortable on the perimeter so that they can't just throw it up over and throw that perfect pass to that post that has that height advantage out on the block.
Well, I've always said the lost art in women's basketball is the entry pass to a low post. So if you can put pressure on that ball, it certainly does make it difficult to succeed getting the ball inside.
Yep, and I think we can do that. And I don't think the whole league is loaded with size. I think we get obsessed with those top couple teams that have it, and that's what separates them. I think the rest of the league pretty much is where we're at, where there's really not a true two posts anymore. Everybody's the game has gone back to the stretch four and the one center, and that's what we have this year. You know, we have I think we're going to play more four guard stretch four, and that's when we were really good with Christina Wirth at that position, and Jen Risper actually having to move in the post. And at the end of that season, the last year we went to the Sweet 16 and won the conference tournament, we played five guards down the stretch. And I think you're going to see a lot more of that play with us, but also the rest of the league. And we'll be able to compete. It won't be such a size disadvantage.
Well, you know, Coach, Geno's got a preseason game this Sunday where they're going to experiment with widening. They're going to play with a wider lane. Think he can do that for conference games against those two teams?
Yeah, that would help us. Okay, I go for that rule. I don't like a lot of the NCAA rules of the transferring situation, but I would go for that one.
You know, there are the new rules in place that I did want to ask about. You know, the four quarters, the advancing the ball. What do you think of these new rules and the impact that they may have?
Well, I guess you'd call me old school. I'm tired of them changing the rules all the time. I can't even keep up. You know, we keep changing the rules, and then we think that's going to change the game. The rules don't change the game. You need to officiate the game the way the rules were put in the first place, and you wouldn't have to keep changing them. I mean, I can't keep it any more simpler.
I think that you're absolutely right. I think that if there was less clutching and grabbing and more free form like it was supposed to be with the points of emphasis a couple of years ago, then it would be the beautiful game that it can be.
And it needs to be beautiful. You know, they focus on all the wrong things. You know, they want to take the girls and make them more beautiful, smaller uniforms, tighter uniforms, and sell sex. It's not a game of sex. It's a sex appeal. It can be a beautiful game when you make it physical, like the men's game, where we don't have freedom of movement without the basketball, and we don't have the dunk, which is pretty. I mean, we got to make shots. We got to not turn it over. We got to move the ball side to side. It should look like the men's game in the 50s, and where you appreciated execution in the half court. And we want to make it faster and lower the rim so we can dunk. Why do we want to be the men's game? We're never going to be the men's game. Let's try to be better at the women's game and the way it was, where we could execute an offense and make threes. Because if you right now, the only thing we could be as good at the men's at right now, if you put us in a contest, is going to be three-point shooting or free throws. So let us take three-point shots by letting us execute. But if you hold every guard that comes off a screen and you hold every post or guard when they go to set a screen, you know, a lot of these kids can't create a shot for themselves unless they play at Tennessee, South Carolina, and UConn. And so you listen to the people at the top, the Genos. That's why the game still has no parity, because you keep listening to the people that have the best athletes and the best size and all that. You're creating them to stay on top by not calling fouls and not calling the game and changing the rules instead.
So looking at this year's conference, okay, and seeing how loaded it is, and what is a realistic expectation for Vanderbilt, and what has to happen for you guys to be able to make it back to the tournament this year?
Realistically, we're going to shoot to get back in the top four and get a bye to go to the SEC tournament and not have to be there on the first day and play in a play-in game. Last year was probably the most eye-opening thing for me and my program here, and that doesn't need to happen again. We need to shoot not to win the league, but get in that top four, get a bye, do well in the conference tournament, make a run, and then get into the NCAA. That will get us into the NCAA.
That extra day is certainly something that takes a lot out of you, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you know, of course, the other thing is if we could reduce the size of some of these conferences.
Yeah. But, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with that. You know, and you know, I don't know what's going to happen with UConn, where they don't play anybody and they win by 60. Every game. Nobody's talking about that.
Yeah.
If you got players that want to be great, they should want to compete. And again, if you're about competition, which makes you great, why do you want to play game after game where you win by 60 and you're in a conference that's not competitive? So you know, at some point we need parity in our game for people to come to games. That's really what's the problem with our game. It's not the rules.
Well, I will
call the rules the way they are. Let's get some parity.
Well, I will say I did enjoy covering Big East tournament, Big East games more than I've enjoyed covering the American Conference up here in Connecticut. So,
yeah.
Well, Coach, I want to thank you for taking time. This has been a great conversation, and I would love to spend a whole lot more time on the topics that we started with.
Yeah.
But I think we're both going to end up in trouble if we do that with various bodies. So we'll let it go at that point, and I'll just wish you luck on what should be a fun season. If nothing else, you got players that are into it, and the style of play that Vanderbilt plays is always fun to watch, and that crazy gym that you guys call home is definitely always great television when it's on.
Yeah, I love our game. I just want to grow our game, and I want to grow my program, and I think everybody needs to be able to have a voice, and I think everybody needs, we need to get back to a lot of things, and like you said, if we get off on these topics anymore, we'll all get in trouble, but we can't. We've got it, you know, at Vanderbilt, we need to get better. We need to work on our own game and what we're doing. And, you know, because obviously we need to get back on the winning track. And if you're someplace long enough, there's going to be ebbs and flows. It's kind of like stocks. So we're looking to rebound quickly and give our best product on the court. And we're working really hard at that.
Well, Coach, good luck this year, and let's hope that we get the calls that we want to get and don't get the changes that we don't want to see.
All right. Thanks so much, Dave.
Thanks, Coach.